Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with the Construction Dorks. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction. I guess we're 3/4 of the dorks, so we're almost a full dork. I got Trent Linen back with me, and I got Travis Voss with me, and we are going to come back and talk about news. So thanks, guys, for sitting down. Another one of these special cool episodes where we'll do a little Contact Crew news, and then we'll follow it up with a little dork out, and we'll get real. Sound good?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contact Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontactcrew.com to learn more. All right, so Travis, I want to kind of start with you, man. What is your first article for us today?
Well, the first one that I decided to go with, and I'll be, you know, full disclosure here, I use ChatGPT to assist me in my search for some news, and I thought it was kind of an interesting tool. I just kind of asked the question, it'll give me two news articles that are prevalent in construction technology now, and one of them, which we'll touch on later, but it was a kind of a more traditional news source, but I'm going to go ahead with the second one, which came up was it actually found a research study from Cornell University where some students went out and they built an autonomous forklift for construction site operations. And there's a, you know, like a 25-page PDF abstract that they put out, and it went through, you know, everything that we talk about when we talk about using robotics and AI in live construction, all the variabilities and all the things that it has to adapt to. I know Jeff will share it out in the show notes. It might be kind of hard to find unless you're like a Cornell alum, but it's one of those really weird things too that, you know, I didn't really expect ChatGPT to kind of present this to me.
Yeah, well, like we could break this down on a couple methods. It's a different search tool. So, you know, there's a lot of people using it for search that it's not really intended for. It's actually probably more environmentally negative and impactful on a power grid to be using it for basic search, but for this type of search to uncover things you didn't and might not normally find, that's a little different. So like there's two parts of this. There's your process, and then there's the outcome itself. And I think for me, autonomous forklifts are interesting for construction site operation in general. And I, truth be told, I'm not going to grab the 28 pages and read it right now. The level of autonomy to me is what's interesting, right? If you look at the earlier shows that we've had on here now, especially with Dig Robotics, it's not what you can do, it's what the market's ready for.
Right.
And what I thought was interesting about Ken and the team is understanding how to take those current skilled operators and make them better and safer, right? And they're driven by that. But then to also upskill new operators quickly. So it's like, what does the autonomy and what is the autonomy level goal to me is interesting.
No. And, you know, kind of, I'll read the little brief summary. You know, researchers have introduced the autonomous dynamic all-terrain pallet transporter ADAPT, a fully autonomous off-road forklift designed to navigate the complex and unstructured environments of construction sites. So that's kind of the first sentence. And it actually did hearken me back to the gentleman you had formerly from Caterpillar, right? So it's kind of like, it does go back to what is possible and kind of what are we ready for?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, what do they mean by autonomous today, I guess? Yeah. Because talking to Ken, you know, it seemed like today's goal was all about technology that augments the operator. You know, how do we put guideposts up for the operator that kind of make that individual make better decisions or understand? Like, you know, he even pointed to the fact that human nature drove people, like when you scoop dirt, it was like you want to see the heaping full bucket. Because it's like, that's my yield. I'm getting more. But, you know, talking like, well, actually, the data says you don't want it to be that full because there's loads and wear and tear. And like they've got the whole efficient load equation down, you know. So it's kind of like they're using the computer vision and stuff like that to make those decisions. I'm sure the end goal would be, is this thing going to roam around the job site with nobody in it and no... know where to go, what to pick up, what it's picking up, where to take what it's picking up.
Right.
You know.
And oh, by the way, watch out for that electrician that just left the portage on, you know, is not paying attention on his phone. Not to call out electricians. It's the first one that popped into my head, but look out for that, you know, that worker on the job site. I mean, there's a lot to take in there. It's kind of funny. You said something about the ideal load, and I don't know why it just connected to me, but we came off of our fab conference and Jake and Kame and Brandon did that presentation on fab shop metrics. Like, people really have broken it down to a science, and it happened way before we used any sort of technology. He was talking about the amount of coal or whatever it was to fire the steel mills and like the exact shovel size. It's complete and utter tangent, but it struck me that people really have paid attention on kind of what is the ultimate or what is the optimum amount of work to get done in each iteration.
And I'll add on that we're always focused on safety. And in my previous life in the masonry world, we saw a couple of deaths due to poor operation of a forklift trying to move a slab. And not with my masonry company, but we shared it as part of our safety and our safety teams so that we would understand and know and circulate it to everyone as part of the toolbox talks and the morning safety talks, because just because you can doesn't mean you should. And right. Autonomy of shutting off and saying, I will not let you do this. Now, there's a level of interesting to prevent death, to maybe have sensors. Like, I mean, how many of us would have thought that we had sensors in our cars that were going to sense and stop them, you know, before we realized it? And how many of us have now experienced using those and avoiding an accident? So there's a level of that autonomy that I'm interested in and preventing people from trying to do things. How many of you have seen somebody do something with a forklift that you really wouldn't want to see somebody do a second time?
Well, and not even know that they were doing it incorrectly, probably.
Correct. Right? Like, I don't think that some of the people lifting the slabs realized the power of that slab. And if it goes off kilter, what it can actually
do. Do you think it would let you use another autonomous forklift behind it as a counterweight on there? I mean, would it let?
Well, since we're cracking jokes too, I was kind of thinking about the forklift Olympics. Like, I'm not trusting it until it can compete and win in the forklift Olympics.
I didn't know there was a forklift Olympics, but that seems like one we've got to be invited to.
It's got to be, right? I want to believe that's a thing.
I've seen a news story about it somewhere, but I can't remember where now. But, you know, and then there's always the videos of the funny ones of the guys jumping them and stuff. So,
yeah.
Until AI can do that, I'm not ready.
I'm not impressed until it knows how to use another autonomous fork truck as a counterweight to the first one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, we've got the autonomy. Trent, what do you got for us this week?
Pulled an article. Actually, it's from today. So pretty fresh one, but from ENR, the Engineering News Record. So this one has two parts. It's under materials, but so two parts to the article that are somewhat unrelated. So it's an interesting article, but Steel Construction Institute announces AI Clark and supports tariff policies. And I think this comes from the North American Steel Construction Conference, which was on April 2nd in Louisville, Kentucky. The American Institute of Steel Construction announced Clark. That's C-L-A-R-K. And that is their artificial intelligence large language model meant to assist engineers with code and best practice. So, it's basically their, you know, Clark is their purpose-built large language model designed to assist with questions, how to use the information it provides and to explain what the respective responsibilities of engineers and fabricators for providing information in certain situations. So I think it's interesting. They kind of gave a line of questioning in here that, it's like if their overall question is, do I want to convert a building to a steel building? Yes. Then they could follow up, or what are the member sizes? What is the preferred layout? You know, different things like that. And you know, he did say it could answer them to get the engineer on the right path. It's like, but we still expect engineers to use their brains. That was the Travis, I'll pivot to you, but I think it's very interesting that all of these articles about AI and when these places are coming out with an LLM or an AI solution, I think right here in the article, it even says like it's a purpose built, but it's not designed to replace engineers, you know?
Well, right.
Which, you know,
yeah,
it probably will replace some engineers one day though, right?
Just maybe some cause concern there from on the engineering. I recently, I don't know, kind of just threw it out there in a talk, and I don't know, you know how sometimes you say something in a talk and you're like, how much do I really believe that? Like, it just kind of came to me in the moment, but I do think that there may be some reason for concern in like the engineering and design space, because, you know, from a mechanical contractor standpoint, you know, how great are those designs anyway? And how useful are those? Not to, you know, there's a whole other thing about the way they're compensated and what they're motivated to do and everything. I'm not dissing that, but the generative design could play a role in that stuff. And then and the other thing too, is SMACNOW is a standards governing body. And we produce a lot of standards that get put into specifications, and there's a whole liability aspect there. Like, we don't want you, if we happen to build an LLM on our standards, we would have to be very intentional that we're taking you to the point of the standard that most appropriately answers your question, but it is on you to make sure that is the right answer, and it is something, you know,
that's
physical.
That's a really good point, Travis. I mean, I'm thinking, I hope we don't, and I think earlier we were chatting about, you know, the future is probably more like WALL-E and not like Terminator, but hopefully there's due diligence still on the part of the engineers or anyone who's using these solutions to pull recommendations from code or,
because you're not gonna, ask
the drawing for you, right? That's
exactly
be your stamp.
That's what I was just gonna say. You're not gonna ask for a Grok stamp, right? I mean,
yeah,
like,
man,
not yet.
I want my Grok stamp.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. I mean, I guess these solutions are, you know, potentially out there to help you, but I guess be forewarned, engineers or you know, plumbing designers or anyone who's out there. I mean,
Jeff, I'll pepper a question on top of it, though. Is this going to be better or worse than what we've seen in some specs and standards where they just copy and paste?
That's the thing. So that was my thing, Travis, is I want to commend them for doing it. I want to put rails around it, you know, like it's like anything. It's not a be-all, end-all of everything, but could this be a better way to get specs, to understand certain things and intent, and get us to a better product in the end? We were all talking about that. The general ability to use these things in some cases can make us dumber. And that is a true and present thing we have to understand. Like, we're already seeing people use AI to produce things that they don't have the ability to execute on, or even a general an understanding of what they're going to do. Some of those risks are okay. If you're trying to get, I'm trying to think of, like, if you're trying to write some articles with it, generate some publicity and some LinkedIn posts, not a lot of risk involved in that process. If I'm trying to use Clark and pretend to be an engineer, there's a lot of danger in that. But on the flip side, the use of the data, you know, the use of the standards, the turning of those standards, Travis, to the people, democratizing that, making that simpler, making it stronger. But also, I mean, wouldn't it be interesting too for you guys, you know, as, you know, well, Travis, you're the standards body, right? But to get the feedback from it.
Yeah, I just had that thought too, is like, you know, again, if I keep you throwing back to ChatGPT, but you can thumbs down a ChatGPT reply, or you can say that's not good enough or whatever. I would hope that there's some sort of collection mechanism on Clark to bring that back and be like, you know, whatever, this expansive steel actually won't work without supports, you know, or whatever the answer comes back, to have that human input back into it.
Are we worried about making us dumber? I almost think the better word is more ignorant. I almost think it's like I just think these solutions are going to make the average person a little more ignorant to what to maybe like personally knowing what the codes and.
You need to be aware enough to know when it gives you a bad answer, right? And if you just start relying it all the time.
Yeah. Again, you're putting in an abstract for something, not so dangerous. Like, you're building something, you're designing and engineering something, you're looking at something from a constructability perspective, and you haven't been out in the field ever. Again, yeah. Me using it to build something. I don't build.
Hopefully they put it in the hands of very competent engineers to begin with, and let the and let them vet it out a little bit before before throwing it to the interns or the people that might be a little more ignorant to what they should follow or not follow. But yeah. But it's interesting, you're seeing a lot of organizations do this now. And I mean, I think we should expect it, and it's probably a good thing, and it's going to be one of those, you know, a tool that's going to allow a lot of people to probably hopefully make less mistakes. Hopefully at the end of the day, something like this does eliminate steel superstructures from failing or having to be reworked or redone in any way. So
yeah, and maybe again, it produces an ability for a trained engineer to produce higher quality easier. I mean, how many times we hear about specs and the specs being wrong, mm-hmm. and the problems with it, and, you know, finding those problems and then addressing those problems, and those causing us looking away from planning constructability and what we're going to do, and we're chasing our tails. Well, this is an opportunity not to do that. But this article also spun a different way. So what was round two? Trent's doing 2-in-1 here.
You know, I'm wondering, the second was, you know, the organization did support the tariff policy, right? So, I mean, I don't think it's any mystery. I know, you know, love it, hate it, whatever side of the spectrum you're on for tariffs. The one thing, the U.S. steel manufacturers are pretty in favor of this. So I don't think there's a whole lot of mystery. The article kind of cites, you know, some of the duties in the past from Canada, Mexico, and obviously China being the big one. So, but yeah, so it looked like two of the big talking points at the, you know, at the conference was one, that they snuck the AI Clark in there. And then the other was they're pretty unanimously in support of, you know, the tariffs on foreign steel.
I mean, the debate is there. We were talking about it before. I don't love the uncertainty that it creates. There's actually some valid arguments to be had depending on why some of this has started. I mean, even some of this in here is about, you know, anti-dumping and other things that maybe aren't as environmentally friendly and aren't as forward-thinking and globally responsible. And that's something that I think it's overshadowed. We don't talk about that portion of it. We're really talking, you know, brass tacks of the finances. And again, I've covered this before, and I hate the uncertainty, and it's really driving some havoc. And I disagree with sort of the speed in which we're going through a lot of this, but that can be argued. And I don't want to politicize. I just want to say that, like, there are some other things we should be talking about in this process and giving ourselves time. And it's an interesting thing for them to come out and do both. I don't know if they were hiding one with the other, or if the writer just needed enough from the day.
I need 500 more words.
I mean, it's decent press though too. I mean, most of what you're seeing out there seems to be, you know, pretty negative focus on tariffs. And I think, Jeff, you're right, a lot, probably due to a lot of the uncertainty, but it is kind of nice to see that there is a side of it that is beneficial to some organizations, you know, here in the United States that are once upon a time disrupted from the counter effect of these, you know. So I think that's their argument is, but they do need it to be certain. I mean, whatever is going to happen does need to be probably solidified. Like, are these tariffs going to remain? Where are they going to go? I mean, because in order for them to get the wheels turning and ramp up if they get the confidence to ramp up production again, only for the tariffs to go away, right? You know, fool me once kind of thing, I think. But so I'm sure the certainty is going to play a big part in it.
And what I was going to say, what I liked out of it was what you pointed out, Jeff, is I don't always think about, you know, why some of this stuff is cheaper to make elsewhere. The standards we hold, the safety standards we hold, the way that we treat our workers, the way we pay our workers. Like there is, generally speaking, most things made in the United States are going to cost more, but there's a reason. And this article really kind of, the tariffs were the main point of the article, but like sometimes you get what you pay for too, right? And if we're trying to be better people, build a better world, maybe bringing some of this manufacturing back to the United States isn't such a bad idea. Again, we keep pointing out the instability and everything that it kind of the way we're going about it right now, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
No, I think that's well said. But also, I mean, you have to look at, you know, some of it, we've built supply chain on it and on the current way. And unwinding a supply chain is not something, in all honesty, that happens in the time period of current leadership.
Yeah. Well, and something's got to give, right? Something's got to give. We have all this work that needs to be done that's tied to the past supply chain. So hopefully we find a way to strike a balance that says, let's continue with the current work, but, you know, whatever, new work. Well, however that looks, because it's not like, oh, I, you know, as an entrepreneur, I can say, well, crap, steel's looking really good right now. I'm just going to open a steel mill in my backyard tomorrow, right? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's, In the perfect scenario in my mind would be, you're not tipping the scale all the way in the other direction to where imported steel is now unlike. I mean, if anything, you're just making it competitive to where now this way and that way are options. You know, to me, I think you're hopefully it's not a replace this for that, but it is a way to say, hey, we've now got a whole nother source of competitive product that can join the marketplace, right? So
that's the hope. And but we can have hopes and dreams. Now we just got to see what happens next. Don't worry, AI will fix it all anyway. So Clark's going to take care of it for us. And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for the construction technology news of the week with the Construction Dorks. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.